Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show. Episode 440 of the Roguecast, recorded November 14th, 2023. The 80s were a great time for space horses. All right, it's another installment of the Roguecast.
Yep, it's our exciting November vibe.
Yes.
Continuing on with the thing. I know, but you know what, though? We saw the Marvels, and we had a great time.
Yes, we will definitely be talking about the Marvels. That'll be our big topic. We'll do a spoiler review at the end, but I think the highlight is we all really enjoyed it.
Yes.
Some of us, we're always a spectrum. Yes. In this case, the spectrum is Nick liked it, Dave quite liked it,
yep,
and I love it so much that I will murder you if you don't enjoy it.
I think Dave and I are on the same.
No, no.
I mean, I quite
like
it.
We're a spectrum, Nick. We have to be a spectrum.
I think the spectrum is in the movie. You can't be a spectrum.
No, sure not.
I might have liked it a little bit more than you did, Nick, and therefore, you hated it.
Yes. sorry, Nick. We're on a spectrum here.
Sure.
Someone has to be at the bottom. You merely liked it a lot.
All right.
Hater Nick returns again.
Sure.
And there's a lot of new number one comics this week.
There are.
And so there's like a few sort of notable games hitting tomorrow. Do I want to hit the
games?
That is
correct. So, first of all, we have brought back our white elephant gifts from last year.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, which, if you don't know, we basically, there are some games that are, board games, various board games that are basically pre-wrapped. Our staffer, Jeanette, not wrapped them nice. She did a much nicer job than I did. Those are nice gifts. Like, if you were to give these to someone, you'd be like, oh, wow, you know how to wrap a present.
You know, I have to give credit where due. I think John did this last year, and I think he did a good job as well.
Oh, okay. I thought I did it.
No, I don't think so.
Okay, good.
These were better quality than you could ever have done.
Oh, that's absolutely true. My wrapping is always has like one ugly side. You know that meme with Homer where he's got like all this fat like gathered up in pins behind it. My presents all look like that. On one side, they look very nice. But if you open it up, Frankenstein.
Well, that's why bags were invented.
Yeah,
it's very nice bags out there.
But
yes, Jeanette did a great job.
The White Elephant gifts are basically board games. We have two levels. You can get ones that are originally worth $30 to $40 for $20. Ones that are originally worth $50 to $70 for $30. And what you get is a nice pre-wrapped gift that you can take to like White Elephant exchanges, or if you have a gamer in your life who's hard to shop for. These are going to be games that are a little bit off the beaten path. They're unlikely to have them, but they're all good games.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so a good quick gift thing.
They seem to have proved popular last year, so I have a feeling that people are going to enjoy it again.
We got a big restock on statues.
Yep.
It did come, unfortunately, with a price increase.
Yeah.
Just the shipping on statues has been crazy, and we finally did have to do a price increase.
You know, I'll say this. They've been at, like, some pretty great prices for a while now.
Yep.
So I think these are still good prices.
It's still a good price.
It's just that, yeah, it was just kind of a necessity.
They're not $200 statues or anything.
No.
So.
But also, come in and check out the Ninja Turtle ones, man.
Yeah.
Those things rock.
We got Raphael and...
Leonardo.
Did we get any other new ones, or was it like just mainly a restock?
We got a new Gambit today.
Yep.
Oh, yeah,
We also got Bastila Shan from Knights of the Old Republic.
Yep, which is a very popular one. People like that. She's chopping up a droid.
I'm like, I don't know who this person is, but it is a exceptional sculpt.
Yep.
It's that
she's
thing
just
where
a badass Jedi.
She's like done the cut through on the droid, and it's like in those like in like anime and manga when the upper half kind of slides off.
Yep.
It's and the way they did it, there's like a glow around where the cut was and stuff.
And
it looks
dope. She's got a cool double lightsaber.
Yep.
But yeah, so big statue restock. The Marvel role playing game.
Real quick aside on the statues. If I'm correct, we're probably not going to do a restock before the holidays.
This is probably the last one before the holidays.
So if you want to get in on that, probably do it sooner rather than later so you don't have something sell out.
It's true. Marvel role-playing game has their first adventure out. It's called Cataclysm of Kang. It is six interlinked adventures. You can run them individually, or you can run them as one big story.
That's pretty cool. I imagine it bounces all over the Marvel Universe.
It goes from level 1 to 6. Mm-hmm. And it has new characters in it. I saw Kate Bishop was in there. I think America Chavez. Some characters whose stats were not in the base game.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So it's basically a whole bunch of new characters as well. So even if you're not going to play the adventure, there's a whole bunch of characters in there that are statted up.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that looks very cool. I, of course, plan to run that next year since I have been wanting to run the Marvel RPG.
Yep, I've got a character made up.
You do?
He's
a chameleon.
Yeah, that's... sorry, I have chocolate in my mouth, so it was... I can't really respond well with this without sounding like a chocolate boy. But hold on. Hold on. Okay. On with the show.
Roguecast, warts and all.
Listen, Chimelians are from Power Pack, if people remember that, with the kids superheroes. They were the aliens who were the nice guy aliens who helped them.
The horsey aliens.
The horsey aliens. And, you know, I feel like a bit of an odd man out for picking such a weird thing, but it's part of the Marvel history. I don't think it's too weird. I threw in a little bit of interaction with like, in their backstory with like the Guardians and stuff, that it's got some modern ties. But yeah, I do have a fondness for some old school Marvel.
You know, between the Chameleons and Power Pack and Beta Ray Bill, the '80s was a great time for space horses.
It really was.
Yeah.
Sounds like the opening of one of those I love the 90s infomercials. You know, the 80s really were a great time for space horses. Thanks, Sugar Ray. Thanks, John Mellencamp.
Dave, I think we know John Mellencamp would be grousing about the whole thing.
Oh, yeah.
You like space horses? Not really.
This is a paycheck, brother.
Yeah. John Mellencamp went on Mark Maron's podcast as basically a big old grump.
Yeah, I to the point where I was like worried about the guy. I was like, oh, this is like something like clinical depression or something like that. Maron would like brought up his pretty amazing achievements, Farm Aid, and you know these number one songs and all this stuff. And he's like, I really only care about painting. And he's like, well, then his mom was a painter, and it's in the family.
Yep.
And they're like, "Oh, you must have had some stuff that you kind of feel pretty proud of sometimes." And he's like, "Nah, not really." I was like, man, it kind of sucks when you're to see somebody reach the top essentially, and then be like, "I'm completely unhappy with it."
It also sounds like Maron was throwing some softballs at him, and he's just he's just like, "No."
I could tell that Maron was getting a little frustrated with like, "Man, he's like, I can't get through to this dude." Yeah. They connected a little bit on their like kind of. That sort of rocker, the drugs vibe. Yeah. But anyway.
You got to talk to John Cougar Mellencamp. He's probably the happy lucky version.
At any point during the interview, did Maron just be like, life sucks, man, come on.
He was kind of laughing about that.
And then Mellencamp
was
like, yes, life sucks.
The antidote to it, I believe, I might have even mentioned this on the podcast, I don't know, the antidote is the Guillermo del Toro interview.
Right, you did.
That guy has like a zest for life.
Yes.
And any topic he'll engage with and fully and excited. And so he was the exact opposite.
So the two of them should interview each other.
Sure, that's obviously like, how it would work.
Matter, antimatter.
That's how the world ended.
Yes. All right. Other games, after our Cougar Mellencamp tangent.
A little bit of a diversion there.
Forest Shuffle, which is a new game from
Guillermo del Mellencamp.
It's done.
No.
Never.
You started it.
That's right.
Oh, right.
Correct.
So you said some other games or something.
Yes, it's a game called Forest Shuffle, which I believe is... I'm headed to the Board Game Geek convention after we record this. I believe Forest Shuffle is sort of one of the hot games that people are looking for. You are. It's a card game. You are trying to gather the most valuable trees, attract species of trees, and create an ecologically balanced habitat.
Okay.
Nothing more fun than conservation.
You know, you joke, but like, there's so many games that have premises that are not like innately exciting. You know, Carcassonne, Settle the Island, woohoo, trade in goods and services.
Is this like a tile based game or something?
It's a card game.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I figured the shuffle had to be like a pun too.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking if it was a tile thing and you had to pick up tiles, you were ripping up pieces of forest to create the best forest.
No, no, you're not. You're kindly forest. You're like forest gods. You're not developers.
Hey, if we can't fix the environment in the real world because of industry, it'll be nice to at least do it in a game.
Oh, also, this is produced on FSC certified paper and avoids plastic completely.
Good job. They put their money where their mouth was.
Yes, they did. So that's supposed to be a good game. As I look at BGG, I think
there's a solid chance you'll come back and give us a report from it.
There's a pretty solid chance you're going to hear about like 30 new games. It's got a 7.5 on BGG, which is pretty good.
That is quite good.
We have coming out tomorrow Pathfinder Core. This is the revamp of Pathfinder to go along with their new, what's it called? Black Flag? Project Black Flag? They called license something new.
Yeah, I forgot.
Oh, I guess I don't. What is that?
It's the new license. Basically, they're getting away from the 5e.
Right.
It is still Pathfinder, still based on sort of 3.5 kind of thing.
Right.
But basically, they're ditching a lot of the elements that make it specifically D&D, so that WotC could not come in and say, "Hey, you can't sell Pathfinder anymore."
This after the big kind of hubbub last year where WotC looked like they were about to, like, really screw with the open license stuff.
Yep.
And they, like, really earned a lot of ill will at the time.
So this is, and this was something they were working on anyway, but it just kind of sped that up. But basically, this is a new Pathfinder player core, GM core. They're splitting the two up for the first time.
Yep.
They are big hardcover books. They have, you know, character classes and all that stuff, rules for them. There's going to be a new monster core coming out later this year. Oh, it is all compatible with Pathfinder 2, yep, because it is still the same game, but the game remains the same. but, like, I believe, like, alignment has been ditched in favor of something else.
I think that's good.
For example, stats are, like, you won't have a strength 18 now, you'd have a strength plus 4.
Right. And essentially, I've seen other indie games starting to mess with that, where you might generate your scores with a 0 to 18 or a 3 to 18
you
or whatever.
You don't anymore.
Okay, you don't.
Because that was only... That's an artifact of D&D.
Yeah.
So what they're doing is they're kind of like going at, like, what is core to Pathfinder, and what is stuff that is basically just because we've always done it that way?
Can I assume that, like previous incarnations of Pathfinder, it'll still be a little higher on the crunch than, say, 5e?
I would assume so, yes.
Which is what people like about it. Somebody just the other day was asking me, and I don't have a horse in the race? What's the phrase?
I think that's right.
Yeah, dog in this race? Do you have a dog in the race?
Dog in the race.
I don't have a dog in this horse race.
I don't have a dog in this horse race.
I guess my personal preference would be a little more towards the streamlined.
Your dog is writing checks, this horse can't cash.
I'm a little more drawn to, like, the streamlinedness of 5e, but when I was telling somebody about the advantages of D&D and the advantages of Pathfinder to somebody who knew, didn't know anything about either, but wanted to know about them, like, Pathfinder, man, they have always had so much going for them. Like, there's some very clever systems in it. If you like to create these really kind of, like, more delineated characters with more... Right out of the gate, you have, like, more unique stuff than you do in D&D, more things that sort of differentiate your character from the rest of the pack, from another first-level rogue or anything like that.
Yep.
They have amazing support as far as, like, not just source books, but adventures. You can get small adventures and not have to buy a giant hardcover like D&D mm-hmm. does. And also, I just like the company's personal philosophy of inclusiveness, so you're more likely to find... queer representation in the characters and racial diversity in their art, which has Wayne Reynolds on the art, which is, he's been like the definitive artist of our times.
The art's great. They also do, one of the things I've discovered is we've definitely seen this, a lot of people don't play humans.
Yeah.
A lot of people like to play different classes, and one of the things Pathfinder, or here are different races, and Pathfinder, they're calling ancestries now, but like, they have some new ones. They have one that's the Leshy, which is kind of like a plant person race.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
And they tend to have a lot more race and class combinations. So if you like that kind of thing, and I definitely lean more Pathfinder than D&D 5e.
Right. You're going to get more variety.
There's a lot
than
of variety. And a lot. You can build a lot of different characters and that kind of thing.
Even for someone like me who's kind of resistant to the sort of the crunchier side of things, I look at it and, like, I want to be more into it because I was like, oh, this is cool stuff.
But, so. Yeah, it's the brand new core sets. These are people who have been excited for these, and they are out. We also have a limited number of the sketch covers.
Yep.
That are direct market only. They have Wayne Reynolds art, but it's like his sketches.
Yeah, yeah. Go check out the awesome underdrawing that he did.
We got a Kickstarter in called Flip Town. This one has a 7.8 on Board Game Geek.
Lots of fancy games.
This is, you flip poker cards to explore a Wild West town. It is called a Flip and Write.
Oh.
So it's like some poker combined. It's a standard poker deck and an open world where you're sort of like you're exploring a western town together.
Some element of roll and write, but
yeah,
done with cards. That's or something fun. Like that. Yeah.
The suit dictates which of the four regions you activate, and then the numbers, the regions are Trail, Badlands, Mine, and Town, and there's different puzzles in each
that's
area.
Cool.
Yeah.
I have to confess, I kind of like when poker decks fit into Old West games, like yep. Savage Worlds did.
It all fits.
What's the setting for Savage Worlds? That's the
Deadlands.
Deadlands, yeah. Also has been its own game yep. many a time, too.
We've got the new Magic set, Caverns of Ixalan, which yep. is notable for being Pirates and Dinosaurs.
Yep, yep.
Also has a chance of getting the Jurassic Park
There are Jurassic
cards.
Park cards in it, yes.
It's one of those, like, in setting-wise, it's one of those, like, jungle expanses yep. And stuff like that, and I guess Pirates on the Coast and yeah. stuff.
We've seen Ixalan before.
Yeah, it is. I always like that, those kind of settings.
And then the last bit of gaming news is that tomorrow we'll have a bunch of new miniatures for the Nullzers and Deep Cuts line.
Yep.
Yeah.
What are some of the hits?
I did not do the unboxing, so the only thing I saw was the big miniature of the Flail Snail.
Flail Snail.
Those longtime D&D players or just fans of their more obscure monsters will recognize the Flail Snail, whose little tendrils at the top, which normally would just have their little antennae, sort of things, have like spiked sort of balls on them. Mm-hmm. They're a weird old school D&D monster that I'm happy to see get finally get a good miniature of it.
Yeah.
I didn't even get a chance to like look at the sculpt, but I bet it's a dope sculpt. Yeah. Because that's what these guys do.
Looks like we're also getting some more Draconians. Okay. So Dragonlance stuff.
Okay, all right.
There's a Magma Scorpion, there's a Loup-Garou.
Loup-Garou. what do we decide, Randy, that that's like a specific French kind of werewolfy creature?
I think that's right.
Is it unique to America? Is it like the, you know, like the Bayou kind of thing?
Sure. We decided that, well, Dave, we just kind of made this up and I'm going to go with it.
Yes.
We decided they were Cajun werewolves.
Yes. Is that, that might be racist. I don't know.
I thought the Loup-Garou was what, like, they were after in Brotherhood of the Wolf. I thought that was, like, kind of,
I believe they
were. That was just, like, they just called it, like, the monster or whatever.
Did they?
Yeah, I think
so. Sure?
All right, well, keep going. I'm looking it up.
All right. I think that the Loup-Garou is just, like, the French name for werewolf. I believe that is the case.
I don't know the backstory behind this one, but it is called an animated fire breath. It's very cool looking.
Oh, yeah. It's one of the animated spells from Eberron, I bet.
Oh, okay. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
There's wood giants and tiefling warlocks. There's elf wizards.
Good. New tieflings are good. That's a thing people will want.
What are these? These look cool. These look like Duergars. They're not. They're Azir warriors.
Okay.
Which look like...
Oh, those are
little,
like fire dwarves.
Yeah, fire dwarves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that'd be a good selection. Dave, what did you discover about the Loup-Garou?
I discovered I can't find an immediate good answer to it.
All right, fair enough.
Okay, here we go. Traditional tales about the Loup-Garou are found in French, Canadian, and European folklore. But it does seem like it's just another word for a werewolf or lycanthrope.
French-Canadian. We left out the Canadian French.
Yeah, and there's the Loup-Garou as well, and I'm gonna have to take a little dive into this. The Loup-Garou, it says, a terrifying legend of Cajun folklore.
Okay.
But yeah, the Loup-Garou, I don't know. And some people describe it as the same thing.
Isn't Loup-Garou just French for werewolf?
I believe it is just French for werewolf, but I also like the idea of them being Canadian Cajun werewolves. So that is my personal headcanon. All right. Let's talk about comics for the week. Let's talk about comics for the second week of November.
Cool, there's a ton of number ones.
Yes, there are.
Well, what do we got first?
Let's start off with the one I think we all really liked, which is The Deviant, a Christmas story from James Tynion IV and Joshua Hickson.
I'm just going to say, it's such a happy Christmas story that James Tynion has bestowed upon us.
I want to caution people on this one.
It's a Christmas murder story.
The last time we brought up James Tynion was for the extremely disturbing, what's the one with the hackers and stuff?
World Tree,
which had an exceptionally disturbing first issue.
Do you think he's got a bet going on with if he can one-up himself on every subsequent
bet with himself?
Issue? Yeah.
It's possible.
I do all my bets with myself, because either way, I win.
You get hairy palms if you bet on yourself too often. This one has a time-spanning series of murders by a... person?
Mall store Santa.
A mall store Santa, but looks like almost impossibly tall. Like, it looks like he's 8 feet tall, and he's like wearing a mask, so you can't really quite see what's behind it, except that there's eyes.
He likes to breathe very heavily.
But
the central part of the story is the guy who was a mall Santa got accused of murdering all these Christmas elves in the 70s.
Yep. Right, and we say Christmas elves like store Christmas elves, not like elves at
not
the
North
Pole.
Not actual Christmas elves, right.
This is a very grounded in the real world, looks like Francesco Francavilla type artwork, or what's his name on Criminal, who's his...
Sean Phillips.
Sean Phillips.
But this is the guy who actually worked with Tynion on The Closet.
I think.
Yeah.
And it is it's a reporter interviewing the guy who seems to be very, like, he's like, I'm in prison for life, I'm used to it, I didn't do it, you know, but nobody believes me.
So
the most interesting portion of this, and like as far as like it's creepy in general. There is a lot of like if you like Mindhunter, Zodiac.
Yeah,
this is a very James Tynion by way of Dave Fincher.
Yeah, for sure.
But the lead character in this, who I think is a gay guy, who is interviewing an older gay man in prison, who was like accused of the crimes, claims he was did not take part of him, and was I think kind of like pounced on because he was gay in, like, the 70s or whatever when they first happened.
Right,
it's a super fascinating conversation.
Yep.
It's one of those, like, just watching these two characters talk for several pages is really interesting and reminded me of those interviews in Mindhunter and stuff like that when you see, like, Ed Kemper or somebody interviewed. And, you know, although in this case there is not that... There is a question of, like, did this guy have a role in it or not? It's hard to know at this point in the story. But you know what I also liked in this? I usually feel like it's manga's the only thing that can kind of do the moment-to-moment horror suspense in comics. It's very tough to do.
Mm-hmm.
But he's got some scenes where people are, like, alone in, like, a darkened mall and stuff like that, and they, like, hear that weird heavy breathing, and they start looking around, and it's pretty tense. I feel like he actually captures some of that same tension that manga does in this.
Yeah, Tynion is probably the best horror writer in comics right now.
Yeah, he seems to be genuinely thinking about how you can, like, break a scene down for maximum creepiness, including, like, moments where, like, somebody will, like, I don't know, like, let their kind of guard down and think that their things are okay, and then, like, they hear a sound again. So I think he's thinking visually, I guess is what I would say.
Yeah.
He's giving the artist room to, like, tell the story visually and be very suspenseful visually.
Yeah.
Do we know what's going on? No.
It could be supernatural. It could be something else. It is a very an effective first issue that makes me very interested to see what happens and where the story goes.
He has a particular knack, I think, for first issues.
Yeah. He does.
Then we have IDW's new book, Ministry of Compliance, which is from screenwriter John Ridley, art by Stefano Raphael. It is a sort of sideways alien invasion story where basically the aliens have taken over Earth, but Earth doesn't know it.
Is it a future story, or is it kind of an alternate present?
It is sort of an alternate future, I think. There's some... It is not far future. There's not, like, space travel and stuff, I don't think. It's more like people in... It reminds me of, like, Inception, the vibe of Inception and that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
it's that kind of sci-fi.
Reminded me a lot of, like, I don't know if you ever watched the movie Equilibrium.
Yeah, Equilibrium, I totally get that.
It kind of gave that vibe to me. It focuses on what would you call her? Like an enforcer?
She's the Minister of Compliance.
Yeah, that's their kind of enforcer and designation.
She's like a super micro... a sword that can cut through atoms.
One of those.
Yeah.
They've always liked that in the sci-fi realm. Now let me ask, what is she forcing people to comply with?
We're not entirely sure.
Okay.
We've got a new D&D book, Fortune Finder, which is Jim Zub, who's been doing a lot of the D&D books we all really liked, Minsk and Boo.
Yeah.
This is a new story. This is new characters.
But it's doing the same thing that he did with the Minsk and Boo stories, which is he a lot of times would reflect whatever the new cool release was.
Yeah.
Which I thought was kind of a neat way of doing it.
So this is a new character named Finder who has total amnesia. He remembers his name and nothing else and finds himself in the city of Sigil, which is a very clever way to introduce all the readers to Sigil because they have to explain everything to him because he doesn't know anything.
Literally, if somebody kind of takes him on a tour of it, which is a very cool tour, you get a sense of what it is to sort of walk the streets of their multiversal city where there's gods and demons and just travelers and, like, all sorts of intrigues going on. It made me want to play in this setting. It made me want to go to Sigil.
I think we all really liked this, right?
Yeah.
It was the first issue.
It had a good sense of adventure. I liked the characters.
Yeah.
Zub always brings a little humor, too.
Yeah. Everything you sort of want out of a D&D story, Zub kind of puts into motion.
Yeah,
this has a bit at the beginning where some guys, like some roguish types, are like, you know, what do they want of him? Are they just trying to rob him, or like your money or your life kind of thing?
No, they're wanting, like, he stumbled into their place.
Yes. Oh, right.
And
right.
They're like,
he just kind of pops out.
They're like, who are you? Who do you work for? He's like, I don't know.
Right. It's pretty funny after a little while because they're getting frustrated, even though they're also kind of amused that this guy whose ass they're about to kick or whatever doesn't know
anything.
They're
questioning him, and he literally cannot answer their questions. Yeah. Image is doing G.I. Joe and Transformers, and one of the things they're doing is they are continuing Larry Hama's G.I. Joe Real American Hero, which is a continuation of the original Marvel G.I. Joe.
I believe launched circa 1981,
correct?
I believe.
This is not in continuity with the current Transformers G.I. Joe stuff.
Right. No, this is, I think, Kirkman loving G.I. Joe and Larry Hama and
This is a legacy book.
Kind of just like we wanted to continue the story that he was doing, just to kind of...
Yep. So this is Larry Hama with artist Chris Mooneyham, who I think is one of the best artists ever to work on G.I. Joe. Yeah. This is a really nice art.
It seems to, my impression, because I hadn't been keeping up with the previous iteration of this when it was at IDW, but it's continuing that story, that it must have ended on something of a cliffhanger. There's like a, when it begins, it's on like, the action is centered around Cobra Island, which is, man, that got created in like the year like 1988 or something like that originally. It's been around for a while. And I always thought of it as like Cobra's coolest victory. Is that they created Cobra Island.
And there's like a multifaceted attack on Cobra Island.
Right. Well, Cobra is going to... They themselves are setting off a bomb that's like a germ warfare bomb. Serpentor seems to... He's got a plan to do something with it, but we don't necessarily know how it's meant to play out. Because Dr. Mindbender is like, please don't set off the bomb.
Right.
And he's like, come on, Mindbender, buck up.
I mean, we know Mindbender's a coward.
It's sort of a race to get the Joes off the island and clear the blast. And they do some cool stuff with the Joe hovercraft.
Yep. And also, and there's also a big C-130 like carrier that's been shot up a little bit. And so, what is it, Wild Bill and Duke,
I believe,
are trying to limp it out. And that's one of those moments where Hama shines because he kind of knows what you need to do to make damaged planes and stuff go, and like the kind of cool suspense you can eke out of that.
And then on the whale, it's like Cobra Commander.
He's been captured, but he's wily. He's crafty like a snake.
Very wily.
Yep.
All snakes are crafty.
I thought the backup little letters from, is it Hama and then Chris Mooneyham?
And then the artist.
It was interesting to see that Mooneyham had no love for G.I. Joe. He never came to it.
Oh, yeah.
And sort of...
Is that the editor?
No, the artist.
Oh, okay.
And he's sort of coming to it late. He's learning to really enjoy it. But you can see sort of the level of detail he takes into, like the whale. It looks awesome.
Yeah,
right. Like, all, like, the vehicles and stuff.
I have a lot of love for the classic G.I. Joe stuff of the 80s. But a fair number of the artists, you could tell, they would, like, look at the toy or whatever it was meant to be based on, and they kind of knocked something out that was not always great.
Right.
Whereas he seems to, like, really be going out of his way to kind of capture some of the detail and that cool stuff you always liked as a kid.
I think this was a big swing for an opening issue.
Yeah.
It's going to get a few more eyes on it because of what Image is doing with the G.I. Joe and Transformers license. I think people are going to kind of check in. And... This is a book that basically spans the, like, what, 5 minutes? Like, in real time?
Yeah, right. There's multiple stories going on, but it's meant to happen during a countdown, essentially.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a really big swing.
Yeah.
And I think, for the most part, Hama hit it.
Hama likes to do that kind of stuff sometimes. And tied into it...
We have a reprint of the very first issue of G.I. Joe with a little bit of dialogue that... He had wanted just a little change, but a thing that was important to him.
Yeah,
but,
it seems like they went out of their way, I think, to kind of respect and honor Larry Hama. And anybody who kind of knows the Joes beyond just the cartoon stuff knows that Hama is the, like, beating heart and soul of that franchise.
Yep. So, yeah, this is... I mean, this for all of us has a special meaning because we all were big G.I. Joe fans. And this first issue is a really good first issue. So I think we would all recommend people check that out if you've never read it.
Dope first issue. You too can see Snake Eyes suggest with sign language, hey, do we really want to send in a dangerous infiltration mission to rescue...
Why don't just destroy all the innocent people on this island?
Why not just nuke the island or have some bombers bomb it? No, he did not know it had a native population on its island. That's what Hawk has to tell him.
That's right. And then he's like...
So you can get a little double G.I. Joe, revisit the original one, which I think holds up well.
Yeah.
Check out the new stuff if you're interested.
There is a new book called Speed Force, which is a team-up of Wallace West and Avery Ho, the Flash of China.
Yep.
So it's a couple of the other speedsters.
This is working in conjunction with the Sicebrerier right. Flash book.
But I think it's gonna be, this is going to be a little more techie and a little less cosmic horror.
And there's a big villain that gets revealed, but it is sort of still working in conjunction with that story.
Yeah. The new Outsiders comes out, which is Lansing and Kelly, who've been doing Captain America, among other things. This is Batwoman, Luke Fox, a.k.a. Batwing. And the third member of the group is The Drummer, a new female drummer who you may know if you read the book Planetary.
Yep.
And this is kind of DC's riff on Planetary. They are sort of investigators of the fringes of the DC Universe. But instead of being all sort of, there's a little bit of the Wildstorm thing, but it is also going to be exploring the sort of secret corners of the DCU.
I think that sort of, yeah, the sort of like covered up elements of multiversal history.
Yep.
Conceptually, this sounds like a kind of cool idea. Like, when Warren Ellis did Planetary, he was like kind of devouring pop culture and different genres.
Pulp stuff, yeah.
But DC alone contains so much, you know, so many different genres and multiverses and things like that, that it kind of makes sense to have a team do that as when you've, if you've got the Wildstorm license.
Image has a couple things this week. Dutch, number one.
Which is a character from Youngblood.
Yes.
I did not remember
he's
this
like
character.
He was like an old soldier then, right? This is this is like 30 years later.
He's not unlike a Cable or something along those lines.
Well, they straight named him after Arnold Schwarzenegger's dude in Predator.
Yeah, he's very Cable and, I just had it in my head, but it's fine. But, yeah, Arnold Schwarzenegger
there
from
nothing 90s
Predator.
Young artists liked more than muscle men with guns.
And sort of a, he's old, he's supposed to be retired, and a villain of his past comes back to haunt
him. They call him back for one last job?
Yes.
I did like that the intent was to take a, at least this is the vibe I got from skimming an interview with the dude, to take an old, extreme 90s action hero and add 3 decades onto it and see where his life is.
Okay,
and I was like, that sounds like a potentially interesting dive.
I mean, it's written by Joe Casey, and the art is by Nathan Fox, which my brain recognized as somebody pretty notable.
He's a good artist.
I forget what
he did DMZ.
That's right, he did DMZ, that's what it was.
Yeah, he does some sort of heavy metal-ish looking
art. So, I mean, it looks gorgeous. Okay. And he does the action really, really well.
All right.
It goes above and beyond what I expected it to be.
I did not know it was Nathan Fox, that's interesting. We got Geiger Ground Zero. This is a relaunch of the post-apocalyptic superhero book that Jeff John's been doing.
And Gary Frank.
Yep. I believe this is meant to be, you know, both for people who have been following it. This is a new storyline, but it kind of, I think, recalls elements of the character's origin. So it's also meant to be, like, a jumping on point. It's clear it's part of a broader shared universe that Johns is working on through this sort of...
Ghost Machine is the imprint. This sub-imprint. And Brad Meltzer and some other people.
Image, yeah. He's got, like, Brian Hitch and stuff.
Yep.
Yeah.
And, what's the G.I. robot thing? What's that called?
Junkyard Joe.
Yeah.
It's a set in the same setting as this, which seems like it's, like, you know, a sort of a pulp and alternate timeline, but not, like, say, a superhero world. But you can see elements of John's fondness for it in there. If you've ever been curious to take a peek at it, Geiger Ground Zero would
be
another way.
Perhaps you want
to
get in on Ground Zero.
Yes, that's interesting. Good point.
Marvel has Superior Spider-Man number 1. This is Dan Slott and Mark Bagley returning to their character, but this is modern-day Spider-Man, so Peter's Spider-Man, he's got his Spider-Boy sidekick from Dan Slott's Spider-Man book.
Yep.
And what has happened is that a villain from the past that basically Dr. Octavius created with his arrogance when he was Spider-Man shows back up, starts attacking Peter, and he's like, who are you? I don't know, because Peter has no idea who this villain is. Meanwhile, Doc Ock is watching the sidelines. He's like, this is hilarious. I created a villain, and she's going after Spider-Man.
the cleverest ways that the Spider-Man, original Superior Spider-Man played out was that, Dr. Ock in the Marvel movies, when it gets undone, when Peter comes back, he's like, what happened?
Yeah.
and there's, it's, you know, It was fun stuff. Peter running a company, finding out some old enemy is trying to kill him. That's an enemy he didn't even know he had, or whatever. And so, yeah, that's all. That sounds like fun stuff. I haven't read this yet, but I did like the original Superior Spider-Man. And
yeah, I'm wondering how Otto's going to wind up back in the costume, because he is very much Doc Ock right now.
Something must be like Peter is going to be like, you handle this or something. Yep. I don't know. Yeah.
There is a new Alien number one.
Yeah, it's by Declan Shelby. It kind of utilizes some of the classic Alien kind of story work about a
an isolated outpost.
Yeah, an isolated outpost
on
that
the edge of space.
Xenomorphs have kind of egged up, and things kind of. Shit hits the fan.
But you told me some stuff that was unique about it, that there was, like, a mission team that was primarily made up of, like, the androids, or whatever
the
they synths. Call Bishop synthetics.
Yeah.
And that there was, like, the skeevy ancestor of Weyland-Yutani in there.
Yep, and then a possible woman who is trying to kill Yutani, because, for reasons unknown.
Is there anybody that's not a synthetic or skeevy man?
Yes. Okay. There's like a whole like military group that this woman is a part of. That's supposed to be like security for him, mm-hmm. but there might be a secondary mission that she has.
Okay. And you had a good time with it.
Yeah, and these are kind of like variants on the xenomorphs. These are ice like xenomorphs.
What? Yeah. You know. Way to bury the lead, Nick. I didn't know there were ice aliens.
Yeah, there's differences like adapted to the cold sort of Antarctic level stuff. Like,
only Arctic Batman can fight the Arctic.
Only
aliens.
Arctic Batman.
Is that because it impregnated an iceberg, and when the facehugger hatched,
yes.
it was an ice alien?
That's actually what happened to the Titanic. People don't know that. It was an ice alien.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Wow, we need to travel back in time and stop that.
I mean, Jim Cameron did do the Titanic movie, and he did.
Or is it just called Alien?
It's called Alien. Yeah, they're not doing subtitles.
Yeah. I'd call it Alien Ice Alien.
Interesting.
Ice Age?
No. Ice Alien.
Marvel also has a new Deadpool thing?
No, this is actually a collection of seven different stories written by all the writers of Deadpool. This includes,
All right, okay.
So, yeah, seven little
stories.
Standalone,
or is this standalone, or there's going to be seven issues?
No, I believe this is just a one-shot.
Is it really?
I thought it was.
There's seven stories in this one book?
I believe that's done in one.
Okay.
But, yeah. All the different writers who have worked on Deadpool in the past. Steve Fox, Gail Simone,
so basically
the Goobster.
You can pop in and see the best of creative teams of Deadpool doing their thing.
Yep, which is Deadpool. AW, that is an erotic thriller based on an AI sex worker.
Yep.
It is a new writer who's mostly been like a podcaster and stuff like that. It's got, as always with AW, really nice art. If you like, use some sexy thrillers.
There it is. What if you had a sexy thriller in the future? Is the very short
version. Issue 4 of Immortal Thor comes out. I think we're all still very much on board Immortal Thor.
Yes,
there is a particularly every issue has some cool idea in it. Yeah. You know, like the Loki's riddle has something that, in a way, I should have realized what they were doing. But it revisits multiple people who. Probably Storm is in this one. She is the major player in it. And there's an extended conversation and back and forth thing, and sometimes some lightning is thrown between them, and it's like only near the end do you kind of realize what's happening, and it's really cool.
Yeah,
I was like, really man, that idea is insane and cool.
Yep.
And it's all it has the big bad guy. What's his name?
Toronto's.
Toronto's.
Yeah. Who's like the god before the gods? The living embodiment of storm and chaos and stuff. He is there. There is much like the Simonson run. There is a sense of this guy's approach, the way Surtur was approaching back in the '80s, and it was like an epic thing where every issue he'd get closer and closer.
Yep.
But there's actually like a straight confrontation with him in it, like in this too. So
I just like the level of respect that Thor shows Storm.
Yeah. Yep. Well, it's to all of the because also in this issue you'll see Beta Ray Bill, and he's handled with an eye to like I read Beta Ray Bill's original comics in the early 1980s.
Yep.
And this still feels like that same Bill.
Yeah.
He's still got some, he's like, he talks about how he and Thor were like brothers in arms and stuff, which was absolutely a big thing in the 80s, but that he feels like that they maybe it slipped away and maybe you can't get back to that. And he sounds just like he did in the era. I love seeing these characters kind of feel like they really are the continuance of the characters from whatever era.
Yeah. Daredevil number 3, for those who have been reading the Daredevil series by Saladin Ahmed.
It's Priest Daredevil.
It's Priest Daredevil. I like that. They reveal the Big Bad, which is one of Daredevil's familiar villains. Fantastic Four 13 features Dr. Doom teaming up with the Tyrannosaurus Dr. Doom.
What now?
He teams up with the Tyrannosaurus Dr. Doom, Dave. What is weird about that?
I feel like there's more needed, more context needed.
Anyway, I've been really enjoying North's Fantastic Four, and I thought this was another good issue. And then Wesley Dodds' The Sandman number 2 this week, which I think we've all been enjoying.
Yeah.
The Golden Age Sandman.
Yep. Someone's trying to appropriate the technology, and he did, but like his... although he has non-lethal gas gun and stuff like that, he has worked on stuff that would be much more lethal at times, and then he buried all his notes, and then somebody found all his notes.
There's going to be an evil Sandman using...
It's actually cool. Evil Sandman is cool looking.
He looks cool looking.
He got a better costume.
Maybe Dave's a fan of evil Sandman.
He looks like the Shadow if the Shadow was Sandman.
Yeah. And then we've got the Adventures of John Kent Superman hardcover, which is the collection of the recent Injustice story, which we all liked.
Yep. See Superman's son go to the Injustice universe and say, "Hey, Dad, why are you a tyrant?
Why are you a tyrant? Why are you doing that?" Star Trek Defiant gets a hardcover. This is a spinoff from the current Star Trek book, in which Worf basically steals the Defiant and has a crew of renegades, including Lore, Ensign Ro, and Ambassador Spock. This is really, really good. I've really liked all the Star Trek stuff that IW is doing. If you are a fan of Deep Space Nine, Voyager, and sort of the other Star Trek stuff that didn't quite get the respect that Next Generation got, you definitely want to check out the current IW Star Trek stuff. And then Clear Volume 1, which is Scott Snyder and Francis Manapul's story of an alternate world where people can use VR to see whatever world they want. And then maybe there's a bad guy who's taking advantage of that, and this detective has to figure out what's going on. It is a cool sci-fi story with really, really nice art from Manapul.
Nice.
I think that's everything comics for the week.
You know what? I want to give a shout-out to Green Lantern right now.
Okay, yep.
I now read 2 random issues of Green Lantern in a row after really not connecting with the Hal Jordan Green Lantern that they were relaunching, Dawn of DC. I was just like, I read that first few, and I was like, man, Hal is old. but I randomly read issues 4 and 5. I've liked both of them. This one has a big... Sinestro is involved, and he's... Like, everybody... All the ring slingers seem to have, like, kind of been grounded or lost their rings, but Sinestro is, like, running this scheme on Earth, and it's, like, come to fruition in this issue. And Hal has to do some really cool superheroic stuff to stop it. There's multiple sort of drone planes and stuff like that attacking multiple cities. And what he does to kind of try and resolve it is actually really awesomely depicted, I thought.
I agree. I thought it was an interesting idea.
Nick gave it a read.
Executed very well. I think that this Green Lantern is not the Green Lantern from the first couple of issues. It feels like there's definitely like a heel turn. Like,
It's like in
psychologically,
issue 1, he was kind of like a cocky D-bag. And now this feels more like, in a way, like the classic Hal Jordan that I feel like I
to
know.
The point where he was like trying to break up Carol and her fiance because he thought he deserved Carol.
I wonder if the artist or the writer got some backlash on that, because he straight has like one of the things I liked is in the previous issue, Flash talks to him and he kind of tells Flash, he's like, man, he's like, I think I was going at this wrong. He's like, I gotta like give Carol her shot. I'm not gonna ask her to wait for me when I'm off doing ring shit and stuff like that. And I was like, oh, that's good. That's the way to. He's been pretty cool lately. So like at this point, if they happen to like wrap it well in the next issue, I'm like, I'm gonna pick up that trade.
All right, well, that wraps up comics for us. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back and talk about some trailers and other stuff. All right, so we've got some more trailers to talk about, as well as a couple bits of other news. Let's just run on trailers. Let's just start with trailers, and I'll jump in the middle. First of all, we got the Ghostbusters Frozen Empire trailer.
Yep.
This is a continuation of the Jason Reitman Ghostbusters that has Finn Wolfhard and the granddaughter of Egon.
Yep.
Right.
Spengler.
Carrie Coon, I believe.
Yep, it's Carrie Coon.
And Paul Rudd. Characters in here. Yep. Paul Rudd was in the previous one.
Yes.
And
he was a science teacher.
And there's some retro Ghostbusters in this, but and then who else? Is there anybody new?
Looks like Kimono and Johnny,
And Patton Oswalt. Yeah,
okay. Which looks like Patton Oswalt is going into the Rick Moranis role.
Okay, I thought he was going to be like the research librarian type dude.
Oh, it's possible.
Anyway,
but a trailer that's like weirdly eerie.
It's a new villain. It is a is like a spooky The Death Chill.
Right, like if you for about like 20-30 seconds of this trailer, you don't know it's Ghostbusters, and there's just people scared on a beach when this weird storm front moves in, and ice with spikes jetting up out of it comes in off the ocean.
Mm-hmm. It's very cool visual.
And you see it like going, like ice going through the city again with spikes jutting through cars and stuff. And then there's a creepy description of it from
Dan Aykroyd.
Yep. Where he talks about how it freezes the blood inside your veins and your bones crack and all this, and
Dan Aykroyd's a weird dude in real life. I'm never sure if like he knows he's doing Ghostbusters or if he thinks he's in an ad for his Crystal Skull vodka.
Yeah. He might have that might have been just his theory of something on the Hollow Earth.
He's like, it's the Death Chill. It can freeze you literally to death. They're like, all right, Dan. So let's try one from the script.
Right. We're gonna edit out just the part where he probably was anti-vax or something.
Well, off camera, off mic, you said that this is kind of adhering more to the real Ghostbusters, the cartoon.
That's what the directors have said. I think Reitman or somebody said basically they wanted this to be kind of like the real Ghostbusters cartoon,
which I am hopeful for because I mean I like that cartoon.
Now, what does that mean though? Tell me what that means to someone who didn't.
I'm
really
moving
see
away
it
from Zool and all like
yeah, more, kind more of like a like new villains and just the Ghostbusters being a thing.
Was it? But right, just more new adventures of the Ghostbusters.
Because most of the Ghostbusters movie, with the exception of Ghostbusters 2, and even Ghostbusters 2 a little bit, is all about them becoming the Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
Like every movie, the female Ghostbusters, this new one that they did, Reitman's, was like about the kids discovering the Ghostbusters. It's all about them discovering the Ghostbusters.
So multiple
stuff.
Origin stories.
Right. In this one, they're the Ghostbusters, and a supernatural
they
thing
just
happens.
They deal with the Ghostbusting thing.
Well, at
thing.
The end of the last one, yeah, the stinger was that Winston had a company that was kind of Ghostbusters-esque.
Right.
It was a large company.
Yeah.
And I think they're going to just continue off that, and this will be the branch, the New York branch.
The New York branch, yeah.
Which is kind of a cool idea. Yeah, I like that. They showed the firehouse. The firehouse looks yep exactly like it did. It looks really cool.
The siren is always very iconic. It's a great moment.
From Ecto-1, yep, yes.
And they used the little piano cue, the Ghosts Hate This, from Bill Murray in the
also,
original.
They showed Paul Rudd as with the kids on the Ghostbusters, and they're in Arctic Ghostbuster gear, which I always love Arctic gear.
Well, I think he is now like the father figure because he's with Carrie Coon,
yes,
I would imagine.
I can't get past the Kid Ghostbusters.
Kid Ghostbusters are cool, Dave. Get on board.
Why do you not like Kid Ghostbusters?
Because this was a series about craggy, smart-ass, middle-aged dudes. And like, I just don't want kids in it. I don't have to be dudes. It can be ladies. But I don't want no babies.
See, I'm all about it. Ghostbusters was aimed at kids. Like, we were what, 13, 14?
But it was one of the way they did it cool in the 80s where you don't have little babies in it.
They're not little babies. They're teenagers.
They're babies. But I didn't like the previous one. This probably wasn't going to be for me anyway. I don't think I'm going to see it, but, like, if enough people said it was cool, I might.
I only mildly liked the previous one. I didn't love it, but I did like bits of it. And this, I thought it set up a potentially good sequel. This looks like a potentially good
sequel.
We
are the Spectrum again, because I really enjoyed the last one.
Okay. Dave's
The
hater, which is a more comfortable place for Dave to be.
It is. You go watch that shit, and I will carry on.
I might
on
not have liked the little marshmallow people, but that was a little
silly. This is more natural. Dave's the hater. It's okay, and Nick is the press play person. This is the more natural flow. This feels better.
I feel better Randy, when you're the hater.
I don't.
Which is pretty frequent, too.
That's true. DC, I'm the hater.
So I'll say this, though. The thing that looked cool to me is that they're treating the threat seriously.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird, and it's the kind of thing I like with spooky, icy, weathery villains or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Seemed kind of cool.
The glimpse of it at the very end of the trailer, him hovering against the entrance of the firehouse looked really cool.
For some reason, I thought it was a witch.
Whatever the ghost is, that is the Death Chill.
I think it's a lady ghost.
Sure.
Death Chillette.
yes.
It just makes you think
Death
she's like a gone.
y'all tell me how it is.
All right. We got the teaser for Inside Out 2. Pixar has not done really great with sequels.
Yep.
But
real quick recap: Inside Out was it Disney Pixar? That's what they are.
It's Pixar,
point,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, they're owned by
it's a Pixar
Disney.
One. Oh, it is Pixar though, specifically.
Yeah.
About what a little girl who was what 10 mm-hmm. or something like that.
I think she was like 11 or 12. She
11
was
just, or 12. Yeah. Okay, and you see inside her mind, and you see little embodiments of her different emotions as they pilot her around and fight with each other. And there's some very touching stuff because it's Pixar.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was a pretty good movie.
It was about her struggling with depression and
well, they just moved to a new place. Mm-hmm. She felt out of touch. She didn't have any friends. Mm-hmm. Yep. She was. Going through bouts of anger that got her kicked off of the hockey team.
Yeah, I liked it because it kind of went to slightly dark places.
Yeah.
But in like a very empathetic way. And
it had Bing Bong.
Had yes. Bing Bong, the imaginary friend that everyone cried.
Yes.
Had.
this is just a teaser, but it shows a new console being installed. In her brain.
She's a teenager now.
And now she's a teenager, and there are new emotions. And the one we see is Anxiety, voiced by Maya Hawke.
Oh, that's who that is?
Yep.
But we also know that Ennui, and I think...
Everything.
Envy, and I want to say there's one other one. I don't remember what the other one is, but there's...
Sarcasm.
There's four new emotions.
Yeah.
And it's gonna be that story. So... This will be fun. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I think it's a good new concept, and honestly, invite sequels.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to it.
Avatar: Last Airbender.
We've been probably cautiously optimistic about this for a while because it's had a lot of the original creators.
It had the original creators, but they left, and that made me very nervous.
Yeah. Why'd they leave, or is that publicly known?
I don't know. And it seems like it may have been creative differences.
Yeah.
Which is not great.
But if it turns out that they just wanted to exactly recreate the show and they're like, we need to find some new directions of our own, I can understand. That's like, you do need to adapt and change things. You don't want an exact recreation.
Well, I think One Piece live action being as good as it was gives me the feeling that Netflix might be able to pull this off. Because One Piece has the vibe. One Piece had kind of the vibe you'd want from Avatar.
It does. Yeah. It does, actually. And it's going to be the high water mark. Honestly, it's weird to say this because the original Avatar is like, I really do consider it the best action adventure cartoon.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it's going to have a tough time beating One Piece. I'm like, no matter how good they do, it's hard to imagine that they will do as good as the One Piece guys.
Right.
Do.
Yeah.
But they have a possibility because of the pedigree of the franchise.
Right. And also, like, the look of this is perfect. Like,
it is.
Everything looks great. Momo
clearly
looks
in defiance
good.
Of Shyamalan's
yes.
forgotten outing with, I believe, a lot of westernized actors.
Yep.
So, but you'll be seeing this and you'll be like, yes, that looks like...
Looks like
Aang.
Looks
that looks like Katara. And then, like, my heart kind of soared a little bit when I saw Appa.
They make good use of the music too.
Yeah,
that music is very
even
very
just
good.
Briefly seeing Iroh and some of the others. Mm-hmm. There's no dialogue in this. There's no scenes. It's all visuals,
and
an atmosphere, and just kind of suggesting the grandeur of the whole world of Avatar.
Well, there's the narration. There's somebody narrating.
There is a little.
There is one of the avatars.
Right. I'm just saying, like, we don't see enough for me to say like, oh, this writing looks pretty good,
right.
Or the voice
scene,
the acting is good. But, like, just as a first impression, it's pretty solid, pretty good.
Yep. We got a trailer for Masters of the Universe Revelation. I can remember, where did we land on Masters of the Universe? I believe I was only a mild fan of the Kevin Smith.
I enjoyed it. I don't know if I finished the previous run.
Yeah, weirdly, I'm in the same spot. I was actually liking it quite a bit, but somehow life got in my way.
Yeah.
It's funny, you guys both liked it more than me, but I finished it.
Yeah, but you're like a machine, Randy.
And
you were probably on your phone for part of it.
That's probably true. I mean, if you ask me what happened, I can't tell you. So.
I really enjoyed the voice acting. Like, I loved what's-her-name, Cersei Lannister actress.
Yeah.
Helena Hedy as Evelyn. It wasn't like every episode was, like, insanely great, but there was, like, some surprisingly good scenes.
That's pretty neat.
Who is the Stapler guy who was the voice of...
Kravchuk?
Orko.
Oh.
Stapler guy from Office Space.
Oh, Mike... No, not Mike Judge. Stephen Root.
Stephen Root. He had this amazing scene as, like, Orko.
Yeah, he did. That's
or no, I'm sorry.
He's Cringer.
As Cringer, my bad.
Yeah.
But I was like, are there tears in my eyes because of something Cringer just fucking said? And so I was really pretty happy with it most of the time.
So this new one is revealing Hordak is coming to bring his alien horde to Earth.
The good voice actor.
Eternia. And it's Keith David is voicing him.
Yep.
And Mark Hamill continues to be the best Skeletor ever.
Yep. You know, I like that Keith David got to be like, what was it? He was like the president in those video games, the GTA crazier games.
Oh yeah, San Andreas.
No, it's a different license.
Right.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
The one where you
Saints Row?
Saints Row.
Yeah, Saints Row. Like, he got to be in that. He has experienced a Keith David renaissance, I believe, you know. Now he's being able to be, you know, Hordak, one of the big villains of, you know, 80s cartoons and all that. I'm always happy to see Keith David.
Agreed.
This is another one of those that, like, the trailer just shows, like, you know, oh, Hordak's coming. Oh, big bad guy, things are happening. Good guys might be on the ropes. There's not much to it. But, you know, visually it all looked cool. The animation was good as always.
He-Man had his battle-damaged outfit.
Yeah, he has the outfit that means he must be punched hard enough that it gets, like, a dent on it. It's like the toy had. Yeah. I don't know if I need it to be exactly like the
toy. Nope, it has to be exactly like the toy.
Like, it doesn't actually get damaged. It rolls out the damage section.
I've been hit. I must...
Yeah, I'm going to show you how ouchy it was. But anyway, it looks good. I'm not, like, super hyped for it, but I probably won't watch it, honestly.
Yeah. And then there are three more trailers, and each of these trailers is an increasing level of WTF.
Okay.
Let's start with Damsel.
Was this like, is this a little bit like last week when we got to the bottom of the barrel by the end of the trailer?
Not by design this time, it just happened this way.
Okay.
Damsel is a Netflix either show or movie, we're not sure which.
I believe it is this... Well, let me look it up, and I can...
Okay. Who's that actress? Millie Bobby Brown
plays a sort of... Looks like a fantasy princess type. Source. And Robin Wright is some kind of fantasy queen type thing.
Yep. And there seems to be some sort of sacrifice in, like, to a dragon.
I think she's being dragged into the Princess Initiative.
It seems to me like they're making out, like, either as, like, a rite of passage for, like, a princess or something like that, that you go and face the dragon, or you are... Maybe it's a sacrifice.
So it's a movie.
It looks like it's a movie.
Do we have a hook?
It says, a young woman agrees to marry a handsome prince, only to discover it was all a trap. She is thrown into a cave with a fire-breathing dragon and must rely solely on her wits and will to survive.
So, Randy, you know, what was that movie? 10 Cloverfield Lane.
Yep.
Is this 10 Cloverfield Lane with dragons instead of John Goodman?
No, because they're definitely a dragon, whereas in 10 Cloverfield Lane, you didn't know for sure.
No, I said with dragons instead of John Goodman.
Oh, instead of John Goodman. Not instead of aliens, instead of John Goodman.
By the way, replacing John Goodman with anything is usually a bad idea, so that's going to immediately not be true. As good.
So, this director...
But as a premise, I think that's okay. Oof. That's cool.
This director did 28 Weeks Later, which we hated.
Right. You know, there's a contingent of followers for that.
Those people are
wrong.
But
I don't know why. You know what the one good part of it is? The part that Danny Boyle directed, like the opening 10 minutes.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's the thing that's happening.
But I think it's a cool premise is, like, the... Essentially, the princess freeing herself. You do see her, like, kind of doing grueling climbing in a cave and trying to get out. I feel like if it was done... It was done right, and maybe this guy ain't the right guy to do it. It was done right. I kind of, you know, even though this is a simple idea and we've seen inversions of, like, oh, the princess isn't completely ineffective and stuff like that. The idea of her escaping from a dragon is a big enough task that sounds like a cool movie potentially. But
yeah. We'll see. I mean, I thought it had some cool concept and I kind of like survival.
Y'all like her dumb Sherlock Holmes movies, right?
Yeah, yes. Enola Holmes is great. They're not dumb at all.
Yeah, I just said that. I haven't seen them. They're probably good.
Next in the Netflix thing
Weirdness.
Is the Three Body Problem. This is an orbital mechanics. It is a problem of taking the initial positions of velocities of three-point masses and solving for their subsequent motion according to Newton's laws of motion and Newton's laws of universal gravitation.
Randy's throwing out math problems.
And if you think this sounds highfalutin, then you need to watch this trailer, which also looks highfalutin.
Here's the thing, Randy. Did you just read, like, the definition of what that mathematically is? But what is the premise of the show?
The premise of the show is involved as the three body. That's why I brought it because this is a Chinese science fiction trilogy.
Okay. I did hear it's based on a popular, like, Chinese sci-fi.
It portrays a fictional past, present, and future where Earth encounters an alien civilization from a nearby system of three sun-like stars orbiting one another in an example of the three-body problem in orbital mechanics. That is right in the premise. That's
okay. Well, what
you
just read was like the actual premise, and like people don't need to know the math of it or whatever.
It sounds like it's part of the story.
Well, I'm sure it will be explained.
I just don't. I want to know what the three body problem is because it references it here.
So I think,
and I still don't know what it is.
I think we have to get to the big thing. This is done by the Game of Thrones people.
It's done by the Game of Thrones people.
Benioff and Weiss.
Right.
It sounds like is it time travel? Maybe like it's three different times. Like
or it sounds. I'm imagining it might be more of a multiple dimensions coexisting simultaneously.
I thought it was past, present.
It says past, present, future.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, like, I believe the mystery of it is kind of baked into it like it is with, like, The Matrix or Dark City. So I'm not too worried about not knowing exactly what it means. I think that's the story.
We just thought in the trailer there were many bombs, and it looks like Inception moments.
People really like this series. It looks like big brain sci-fi.
Check out the big brain.
So Randy is like, they're not pew-pewing at an alien.
You know how I am. I'm a dullard. These look too smart for me.
I thought it was an intriguing trailer that does look like it's, like, you know,
yeah,
big concept sci-fi. Randy, did you like, I don't know, Arrival?
No, not so much.
I wasn't huge into Arrival either, but that's because I don't like that filmmaker.
Yeah.
Even his Dune movie I like, but don't
Denis
love.
Denis Villeneuve will get mad. We'll have words with you, Dave.
Uh-oh, Frenchman.
I tend not to like thinky sci-fi in my movies and TV. I tend to like thinky sci-fi in my books.
Mm.
So I don't know if this is going to be for me. But also, these guys dropped the ball on Game of Thrones, so I'm not
you know,
sure.
I feel like that one season, I've been watching clips of it lately on like Reels, and it's just one amazing scene after another. There's so much good stuff.
And it looks like they're dragging over a lot of their Game of Thrones fan. Looks like the
in
cast.
There.
Yeah, John Bradley, Liam Cunningham, who Davos.
Davos.
Yes.
He's the Onion Knight, right?
Yep. Looks like also Jonathan Pryce is coming along.
Oh, it's like Jonathan Pryce?
Man.
Never better than when he's playing
112?
Yeah, he's in that area.
He's not 112.
He's 108, Dave. He's a spry 108.
He's 76 years old. He's not that old.
Ancient.
Crone.
You know, I think that they also like to produce, though. I think they like to produce, like, as a fantasy series, Game of Thrones was very, very much pulled you in.
Yeah.
This doesn't have, like, that immediate look of a hook like that, but I suspect that it may be more mainstream than you think it is, Randy.
We'll see.
I think this was that first trailer where they want to do, like, Inception and stuff and have it be like, whoa, what the hell's going on? Yeah. What's this Matrix? What's this Dark City? I'm not sold on it either, though. Like, I don't think... what is it that has Foundation on? That didn't sound like it was going to be up my alley. Not that I have the streaming service anyway. But, yes, this could go, honestly, too conceptual for me, too.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, I think their track record of, like, six great seasons and one bad season or whatever it was with Game of Thrones, I'm like, I can give them some benefit of the doubt.
I guess. Remember that also their follow-up project was going to be Confederacy.
Listen, maybe that was going to be better than we think it was, and it was, I don't know. I don't think they're villains.
Not villains.
I know that also, like, one of those dudes, the first thing he ever did was, like, he wrote a book in the 90s that became the movie The 25th Hour, and I always thought that was a really good movie.
Yeah.
And so I assume it's probably a pretty good book too. And so
no, I'm not down on it because of that. I would say that it's not a selling point for me. These guys at Game of Thrones because I didn't like.
I need to start sending you some clips because man, I've just seen one amazing scene after another, and they're like scenes I've forgotten about. Yeah. They're not all the biggest scenes. It'd just be some random clip of some characters talking, and man, the dialogue's dope.
We'll see. I would like this to be good. I'm not super into it just yet, but I might give it a shot. What I will definitely not watch is the last trailer we're going to talk about. Merry Little Batman.
This looks bonkers.
An animated Batman holiday special, but that's not like in an existing style. It's kind of, for a minute I was like, is that like Sergio Aragonez's
It's
style?
Got a very weird stylized, goofy, cartoony thing.
And yet falls within probably the Steven Universe, what do they call that, the Cal Art style of animation?
Luke Wilson voices Batman, who is a bearded daddy.
He is
dressed like a lumberjack. I swear to God, he's dressed like a lumberjack.
I get nervous when I start hearing Batman and Daddy in the same.
And then his adorable moppet of a son, Damien, who looks like no Damien we've ever seen.
Actually kind of, I hate to say it, but like he's like generic movie kid who's like, he's like, I just wish Dad would trust me on my own.
I want to be a Batman.
Yeah, I want to be a Batman.
Yeah.
But weirdly, like the thing that people like or hate about Damien is how utterly self-confident he is usually and manipulative
this
stuff.
This is a weird take, and he basically...
But here he might as well have been like Dick Grayson.
Yeah, so Batman winds up crashing the Arctic and Joker decides he's going to steal Christmas along with Penguin and Bane and some others.
Yep.
And the only person who can stop him is Damian with his stolen bat technology.
Yep.
It's weird, y'all.
It's this is a very weird trailer.
I feel like most of the gags and stuff on it felt like they landed poorly. Flat. Yeah.
So the guy who did this is Mike Roth, and he's the guy who did the regular show.
Okay.
All right. That fits into place. It had the quirky vibe of one of those yeah. Cartoon Network yeah. shows. You know, maybe people will end up liking it, sure. but the trailer did not...
This could not be less for me. I can't... The only way this would be less for me is if Deadpool was in it somehow.
As if it also had some Chinese sci-fi stuff in it. And Deadpool, somehow.
This was weird. I was like, this blew my mind that it existed.
I mean, in a lot of ways, it's not that weird. It's still just a heartwarming Gotham City Christmas story with Batman kind of doing traditional holiday stuff. But yeah, it seems like a bad fit.
It's weird.
Yeah.
All right. I know y'all are excited about this. They're doing Jurassic World Chaos Theory.
Oh yeah. Well, I don't know much about it, but basically it's a follow up to the Camp Cretaceous CG cartoon.
Which I never finished.
Yeah, same here. I just got time for all this stuff. But I watched like two or three seasons of it.
Yeah, it was two or three seasons. They kind of fit in with the timeline pretty well.
Yep. And like straight up, like that second season was great.
It was.
Like when that like one kid went off on his own and grew up with Bumpy the Ankylosaurus.
Yep,
that was the best.
It was really cool.
And for people who didn't see Camp Cretaceous, it was like an all ages Jurassic Park series. Most of the monster chewing of things off screen, but like at least one or two people got
yes, offed. Especially like I think in like the second or third season where like the villains really? Got like eaten by the dinosaurs. Yeah, I thought so too.
But what it was, the vibe of it was kind of like kids who got stuck behind on an island. They were like there, they had won a prize.
Yeah, they're and for various reasons they were all kind of invited to sort of experience the opening of the
Jurassic World.
But like a specific like you live in the tree house.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the opening of a new attraction kind of thing.
And then the events of the movie Jurassic World happen and like things all the shit hits the fan and the kids kind of like there are evacuation boats and stuff in that and the kids don't make it to that. So they spend like several months on the island.
Yeah.
They kind of have to survive by their wits and you see them like sneaking into the compounds where the dinosaurs are created. Go into the like park attraction areas, like where there's vendors and stuff like that. But it's all empty. But they're like, "Oh, we need to go get some food. Let's go try it." And it had that fun vibe, like in whether it's in Dungeons and Dragons or anything, of exploring a place that's kind of a neat geography, like a neat location, a playground, or like a sandbox.
And they may have been
they made the island a sandbox of cool places.
And they're being hunted by various like dinosaurs. There's a what's the big one that's scarred.
I forget. Not the Spinosaurus.
No, it's not a Spinosaurus. I don't know, but the Carnosaur.
Yeah, yeah, with the sort of devil-like horns.
Yeah, he's very cool looking. Yep.
And the kids are all kind of like, there's one who's like the YouTube queen. There's a, there's a nerdy kid.
The kid who lost his dad.
Yeah, and they all end up being good characters.
I will say this is an all-ages.
Even though it looked a little stock at first. At first I was like, I don't know.
This is one that's easy to sort of write off because it kind of looks kiddy at the start.
It does?
But the story itself grows and is
wait
definitely...
Wait till the counselors get eaten and then the good times start.
I mean, Bradley Whitford plays a villain in one of the seasons, I think the second or third season. But yeah, no, this is a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to...
So now there's like a sequel thing, and is this like some time has passed, I think, the characters have aged up a little bit?
I completely forgot to watch the trailer, because there is a teaser trailer for it.
An article.
No.
You know, I believe it's one of those that's like so short that it's almost nothing. You see like one character.
Yeah.
But so, I think my impression of it was like a few years have passed.
Okay. It is like a straight up sequel to the series, though, so I would assume some of the same kids are back.
Well, it's called Chaos Theory. Is Malcolm going to be involved in some way?
I'm sure Jeff Goldblum will do whatever.
He's just there. We're gonna finally see a CG version of him with his shirt open, just sitting there breathing.
Sexy Ian Malcolm.
John.
And the last bit of news also involves giant dinosaurs. Marvel is doing ROM, big omnibus of ROM, doing big omnibus of Micronauts, and we were waiting for this announcement. They're doing a big omnibus of their Godzilla stuff.
Yeah.
So it's pretty awesome.
I have all this in essential format, like the black and white.
Yep.
Last time they reprinted it, I may still spring for the Onimus just to get the color.
You like to see Godzilla in green.
It was super cool. This is all really good. If you ever want to see Godzilla shrunk down to mouse size and then slowly growing up so that Dum Dum Doo can swing him around by his tail, that does happen.
The heart of the series is that SHIELD has like a special helicarrier that's designed to track Godzilla.
Yep.
And Dum Dum Dugan, who's, you know, usually what? He's like a field commander for Fury and stuff like that in the traditionally. He's the one. So he's like that blasted lizard. We're going to get him this time.
He's like Ahab. Godzilla totally. Is his green whale.
And they like put Godzilla in all these weird situations. And the kind of neat thing is it's stuff that they kind of couldn't do in the movies or wouldn't devote a movie to, but was weird enough to fill an issue in like the year 1978 or whatever it came out.
Yeah.
And so, yes, Godzilla gets shrunk. I mentioned the story where Godzilla is in like Wyoming and he's gone like into the heartland of America. And like these ranchers are like out doing their ranch thing, and they like ride around the valley, and they just find him sleeping there. And I was like,
"Yep,
it's kind of a cool scene, even if it's even if you're not into, I don't know who the artist was, Herb Trimp, I think.
I think it was Herb Trimp, yeah,
Herb Trimp's art. But it's like, this is some cool stuff. So yes, and also in general, I like that Marvel is revisiting these toy properties, which they did treat seriously at the time, and or in general, sometimes the match of like. Whatever their other solid comics were at the time, maybe not the heights of a Frank Miller Daredevil or a Roger Stern Avengers, but really very rock solid.
Mm-hmm.
But we presume these rights will be gone again.
Are not going to be in print for a long
six
time.
6 months or something.
Yeah, so they're here for a good time, not for a long time.
Like with the others, if you're interested, let us know. You're going to want to get the Omnibus now.
Yep. Now we shall just wait for the G.I. Joe reprints, the Transformers reprints.
That's coming through Image and Skybound, I'm sure. So.
I'm sure.
Yep.
All right, that's it for news. Let's go take a break, and let's talk about the Marvels. All right, so we're going to start by offering up spoilers. If you've not seen the Marvels, what's wrong with you? Go see the Marvels.
Yep. I think there's some people who are not seeing the Marvels, and part of it is they're like, oh... It had a bad box office weekend, so it's no good. Or I don't want to see, a movie that's like a women's Marvel movie or something
or
like that.
There are people who are just tired of Marvel.
Right. And I have some Marvel fatigue, but like this undid it for me. not completely turn around, but I'm like, man, I need to go finish watching that Ms. Marvel series because... What's the name of the actress who plays her?
Iman Vellani.
Man, she's the best.
She's great. Kamala Khan's one of my favorite characters.
Yep.
And they found the perfect person to play her.
Yeah.
And so after... I've been looking forward to this since they announced it. They announced this fairly early on that they were going to do the Marvels with Ms. Marvel. And I think before the Ms. Marvel show came on, I think they announced that.
I believe it was.
And it was going to have Monica. And Monica Rambeau is one of my other favorite characters who has never been treated well in the comics. Warren Ellis will never be forgiven for what he did to her.
Arguably, Roger Stern, who created her, did treat her well.
Yes, he did.
In the Avengers and in Spider-Man.
No one since.
I agree.
And she's one of my favorite characters because I've read her. She was in the Avengers when I was starting to read the Avengers, and Roger Stern just did this great character.
A perfect example of how you could create a new character who was kind of whole cloth new and really do right by her. And, that feeling of like, oh, when you step into the Avengers, you become legit.
Yep.
I'm sure at the time, had we had the same vernacular,
they would be like,
now,
oh, Mary Sue.
Yeah, right. It's a woke inclusion.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Right.
Even at the time, though, I know when they had Black Panther and stuff in like the 70s, they did like quotas and stuff came up and Peter Gyrick and stuff like that were and some public. The comics themselves acknowledge that. So I guess what I'm saying is assholes have always been around.
Yes, they have. They always will be.
And they always will be.
Unless I have something to say.
What were we talking about? Oh, so we're talking about Monica. And I want to mention the other neat thing, of course, built into Kamala Khan's story of Ms. Marvel is her fandom. For Carol, a.k.a. Captain Marvel.
Yep.
And so the pair finally meet in this. And that's the big thing. And if you saw the trailers, which I was not in love with the trailers, you see that their powers become entangled, and there's clearly some weird flip-flopping. Like, when one uses the power, they all kind of swap places. And, you know, it looked like there was a lot of humor and the Samuel Jackson in it. And all I can say is, like, when I actually saw how it was executed, I loved it.
I think this is the best Marvel movie since Endgame. I think it's better than Guardians 3. I think it's better than Wakanda Forever.
Interesting. For me, Spider-Man 3, whatever that was.
I don't count Spider-Man 3.
I mean, it's a movie.
It's a Sony movie.
Okay,
it's
whatever.
A Marvel you're
right. Yeah. If we're counting that, I think I like that better than the Marvels. But
you know what's funny is
I think
feel
the
like
Spider movies is their own thing.
Guardians might have been in some ways. Guardians 3 might have been a little bit more polished, but I think I like this better.
Yeah.
So
I love Guardians. I thought Guardians.
Yeah,
Guardians
that's not
3,
a knock on
I
it.
Really like Guardians 3, but I liked the Marvels better,
including the Guardians Christmas special.
No, the Guardians Christmas special is TV. That's different.
Yeah, that's. TV's for TV freaks.
Yeah.
What kind of freak watches TV?
Yeah, what kind of freak watches TV?
We've all watched that special.
Yeah, no, the Guardian special's great. The Werewolf special's great. Yeah. But anyway, yeah, so let's just, like, quick set up the plot.
So, for what we should say, this is like an hour and a half. It's a short Marvel movie.
It's 145.
It's 145, yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. But it's less than 2 hours, which is not the usual.
But it is a fast-moving, there is little downtime.
Yeah.
It is just a nonstop kind of action.
But it also has a lot of character stuff.
It does.
So the premise of this is very simple. It's that basically, in the 30 years since we saw Captain Marvel, I mean, she was there for Endgame, but basically Captain Marvel...
Since she had her adventure in the 90s with Nick Fury.
Yep.
She went and destroyed the Supreme Intelligence.
Yep.
And that caused a civil war that basically destroyed the Kree home planet. So, unintended consequences of Carol trying to basically take out the people who'd stolen her memories and that kind of thing.
Right.
And so that's why she has been in space this whole time. She's been embarrassed to come home. And I'm like, that's a pretty good
yep.
way of why Carol was not in the last 30 years of Marvel movies.
And although the villain is not what kind of you're going to really be going to this movie for,
no.
The villain being like, oh, I'm a Kree, it's like is she an accuser?
An accuser, yeah, she's an accuser.
Like Ronan. You can see how the destruction of your homeworld and your entire culture might lead you to be a little vengeful.
Yep, sure.
And so she's out there with her hammer, and she's got a very specific scheme that has something to do with kind of attempting to, in a way, revive the Kree world while getting revenge on Carol.
Yep.
And meanwhile, all these people are joined together with
and
powers.
And she's found this band that looks like the bangle that Miss Marvel has that activated her mutant powers.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Which it turns out, in a thing that delighted me, one of the many things that made me clap in my seat, there are the Quantum Bands.
Yep.
Which belong to the original Captain Marvel in the comics.
Right.
Yep.
And then to Quasar, right?
Yes.
Are they the same?
Yeah. I believe they are.
That's what I thought.
Yep.
So I thought that was super cool. I was hoping the bangle was going to turn out to be related to the Quantum Bands.
Yep.
And that they can be used to sort of open portals to other dimensions.
Yep,
and that she is using these to like steal resources from planet that Carol has saved.
Right, right. It's a fairly classic sort of villainous thing to try and undo the hero's work.
Yep.
What I'm glad is that they didn't linger too much on like I've destroyed everything you ever saved.
No, no. They managed at the end. They're like, well, we've restored all those planets. Like they even threw that line in there of like we took care of it.
Yeah. But they did some scary stuff.
Yep.
Yeah. Some scary stuff.
And
when you see like a Skrull settlement early on.
Yeah.
And she like makes a sort of token like, hey, if you come join us or submit to us or whatever, then we'll offload you from the planet that we're going to take over.
Yep.
And they're like, what now? And then they, you know, clearly they just start doing the atmospheric rip kind of thing. I continue to like these sort of Skrulls kind of as refugees.
Yeah, I thought that was good
as a
too.
Concept.
Yep.
Undoing the kind of weirdly xenophobic, foreigners could be lurking among us kind of vibe of old Skrull stuff, even though, admittedly, I do always like Aliens Among Us stories,
or
too.
Or Skrull stuff from a couple months ago when they basically just got rid of what happened in Secret Invasion.
Yeah.
But as a result of all this, their powers become entangled. And yes, when they both use it, when Monica or Carol or Kamala use their powers at the same time, they swap places with whoever else is using their powers.
Yep.
Which, of course, sends Kamala off into space, sends Carol into Kamala's New Jersey bedroom, where she is surrounded by a shrine to herself.
Yes.
And what is just a delightful scene.
Yeah, that pan around of the room where there's, like, art of her and, like, Kamala with, like, BFFs.
Best friends, yeah.
On it is hilarious. And honestly, Kamala's family reacting to having this woman in the house is fantastic.
Her family does steal a lot of scenes. They're great.
I loved them.
And the thing I really liked about this is that Kamala Khan is sort of like, she's kind of like Spider-Man was in the Avengers movies. She's the one who's like,
starry-eyed.
This is all cool to her.
Yeah.
Yep. Like she just wants to be a superhero real bad. And she winds up becoming sort of the heart of the movie. She's the one who's like, snaps Carol out of her sort of self-indulgence. She's the one who gets them all working together.
Yep.
Although they do have that great training montage where they're training their powers back and forth.
It's cool. They like, yeah, they learn to use their, if they're like, if we're going to swap places when we're doing our powers, can we do it to our advantage? Can we fight still with and do that? And they start training, and it's a dope scene.
And then as a result, the fight scene at the end is really good.
Yeah.
Like where they're swapping.
Well, I thought the original fight scene is probably the best, where they're kind of swapping crazily by accident, leading
that
to some amazing,
incredibly hard to choreograph.
Yeah.
But it was all clean. It was all kind of very...
I mean, you get the chaos sense, and you might miss some details, but it's pretty much always clear who's swapping with who, and as a result, you get to see them all trading off enemies multiple times.
And using their powers in an interesting way. I honestly thought some of the Kamala Khan's usage of powers here was a lot better than what she did in her own show.
Yeah.
There was just, like, the level of choreography and sort of, I'm going to say higher budget.
Sure.
Definitely kind of allowed them to...
But it sort
of
fits. Also, she's just been training and learning to use them more.
Yeah.
You know what I thought was interesting? When I look back on it, Kamala has primarily been, I haven't finished watching the series yet, her own series yet, but she's primarily been like a Jersey-bound hero, right?
Yep.
She's arguably like kind of on that street hero thing, same as Spider-Man.
Yep, for sure.
So she gets dropped into a cosmic adventure, and like that could, it's the kind of thing that could have been like, this just doesn't feel right. But at no point did I ever think I'm like, oh, this is, I think because there was a lighter atmosphere to it. To the point where even Nick Fury, so much better than the dour Nick Fury I glimpsed in Secret Invasion.
This is way more fun Nick Fury.
This is fun Nick Fury who's up in space, running operations. Also, you know, if something jumps, some monster or bad guy comes up on him, he will pew-pew it.
That was the thing. Secret Invasion wanted to present a sort of John le Carré, old spy Nick Fury who had lost a step. And that's not Nick Fury. Nick Fury is the guy who never loses a step.
Right, that's like kind of what's cool about him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this was much cooler. He just rolls with everything.
Can we talk about the flirking of it all?
Yes.
Yeah, well, you know, Nick Fury's always been, according to these movies, a cat man.
Yeah
he's a friend, but he's also a friend of Goose, which
so
is...
Goose, I thought Goose was just going to be like a little riff, you know, that they would make some jokes on it. But no... Goose turns out to be very crucial to the big rescue scene.
Yeah.
As it turns out, Goose has multiple Flurkin babies, and that the best way to get these people off the ship when they don't have their shuttles is to have the Flurkins swallow all of them.
Right, because they have like an interdimensional sort of stomach where you kind of get pulled in, and then they can like barf you up
just
later the way cats do.
There's
just
a great,
let the Flurkin eat you.
Yeah, there's a great line where it's like, stop resisting, let the Flurkins eat you.
Right, well, it's like that automated voice. It's like, you know... cease running. Let the Flurkins devour
you. It's not
you.
GLaDOS, but it is GLaDOS.
It's hilarious.
All to the tune of Andrew Lloyd Webber's
Memories
from Cats.
Cats, yes.
It was
slow-motion scientists and S.H.I.E.L.D. types running around the space station in utter terror as Flurkins eat them.
Yep.
And save them.
And then they literally have to herd cats, which
is
pretty amazing.
I think because of that lighter tone, I was never... At no point did I say, like... Oh, Kamala shouldn't be, like, doing this. She should just be fighting, like, muggers or something like that.
Yeah.
And so it all had that kind of, like... well, the thing I told you right in the theater, right after it ended, Randy, it reminded me... This is really only an 80s kids kind of thing, but, like, there was a Hercules miniseries, two of them, actually, in the 80s, that Bob Layton wrote, Andrew, I think, where Hercules went on adventures in the space, and he had a recorder android with him who was kind of supposed to record his glories.
Yep.
And it was some trippy stuff. There was... you know, him rescuing space princes and stuff, but also at one point, there was a weird thing where there was, like, a dude who was, like, in jail for, like, narcotics abuse with, like, some kind of future thing. He plugs it into the recorder droid, and the recorder droid, like, does all of his drugs.
Yeah.
Because they, that was in the, I think it was keying off the Cheech and Chong era. Yeah. Right? But, or when Thor became a frog in the 80s, these kind of things are, like, pretty over the top, where you're like, if it wasn't handled so well, it could be bad.
Yeah.
If the Flurkin thing wasn't handled so well, it could have been bad.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was handled well.
Yeah.
There's also a planet where they sing things.
Yeah, I was thinking the musical planet was a great thing. I thought, in the trailers, I thought that was going to be, like, actually in India or something. And like
I thought it was a Bollywood number somehow.
So they managed to have their Bollywood needed to.
Yep. Yes. That was a super fun aside there. Yep. It's just basically like an old ally of Carol's, a planet that's friendly to her. With that's just their custom is that their interactions are sung.
Yeah,
and it's pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah, that was a blast. And then there's the post credit sequences.
Right. Is there just one?
There's just one.
There's two. Well, I mean,
Monica
was sort of post credits.
Well, right. There's basically the end credit or the end scene, which is the Ms. Marvel doing Nick Fury.
Oh, was that not the post credit?
No. That was just the end of the movie.
That's okay. Right. There are two things. Yeah. So I guess so. That was the end of the movie.
That was the end of the movie.
Yeah. Right. We see her go to.
She's doing her Nick Fury cosplay. She's got like a baseball cap. She's directly referencing the end of the Iron Man movie.
Yep.
Right. The Avengers Initiative.
The Avengers Initiative, where she is going to recruit Kate Bishop through her Young Avengers.
Who has been recently seen in Hawkeye, of course.
And it's delightful. Lucky is there.
She sort of stumbles her way through trying to be the cool ringleader.
Yep.
And
Kate's
very
just confused
fun.
By the whole thing, which is also delightful.
Yeah. I like that I was able to enjoy that scene without having, say, seen Hawkeye, which is also on my list. Don't panic. It's Christmas time even, so it's going to be
you
good.
You should definitely see Hawkeye this
I'm very
Christmas.
Excited to see it. You know, it's as much as I put off stuff sometimes, it occasionally means that when I watch it, it's like just the right time.
Yeah.
And I think with the holidays coming up, it'll be good to revisit
I'm planning
Hawkeye.
To rewatch Hawkeye for Christmas. I'm super excited.
And then there's another sequence.
And then the other sequence is, Monica is in another universe. And that universe seems to be the Danger Room of the X-Men, and Kelsey Grammer's Beast is there, as well as her mom, who in this universe is Binary.
Right, which was a version of what was Carol Danvers' incarnation in the classic Marvel comics.
Yep.
In the straight-up Binary costume.
But this seems like, yes, it's an alternate universe. She did a big sacrifice thing where, you know, like, she got trapped in this universe to save things. And, we don't quite know what it all means, but we got to see some X-Men stuff.
It felt very much like the scene in Doctor Strange Multiverse.
One was that?
Madison Multiverse, where they had the Illuminati.
Right.
Where they had
right.
her as Captain Marvel, and they had Professor X, and they were definitely, and they played the X-Men theme, and it was definitely like, this is the little fan service-y thing, except that everyone doesn't die in a bloody battle immediately after.
Right. It was more like the... Oh, that's right. I love Beast. Yeah. You know, that kind of thing. Yeah.
And it's definitely more not the Kelsey Grammer Beast of, like, X3 or whatever. It felt very much in line with the...
You thought he was more like the animated
Beast
show.
Animated.
Yeah, we...
With the white lab coat.
Off
and the,
mic, we tried to kind of interpret it, and we have our own questions and confusions.
Yeah. I was thinking it's the Illuminati universe, but it's definitely not.
But I'll say this. Like, whatever they ultimately mean to do, and I kind of agree with you, Randy, that I don't think this is, like... That's going to be the X-Men.
Right.
I think it's meant to, in some ways, set up the handoff.
Yeah.
But it's an exciting thing. It was a fun and energetic
ending.
And
the theater loved it. Yeah.
I'm pretty open to whatever they might want to be doing with it, but it was an exciting ending.
I do want to say, the one thing, the elephant in the room here, is that this is not doing great by movie standards. I mean, it made $110 million over the weekend. That's not nothing. But who knows what the budget was, and expectations are super high. Everybody's got the knives out for Marvel. It is a little disappointing to me that we didn't get to see this in like a theater. We almost saw it opening night. It was disappointing we didn't get to see it in a theater full of enthusiastic people. Like, I missed that experience, and I hope that's not gone forever.
I mean, my theater was really into it.
But there was only like 50 people in that theater. Like,
oh, really? Ours was packed.
Ours was not full.
Now they were showing it a lot of screens. At that one. But yes, there's no doubt it's underperforming right now, and I'd like to. I think we would all probably like to just get your ass out and see it, people.
Yeah.
Because here's the thing: I've seen, and also the reviewers kind of had it in for it. They, But I think some of the things they're going after, like, are things that I think objectively you can legit say the villain's not, you know, like, their strongest villain.
Sure.
The plot is a little strung together to, like, you know, make the characters go where we want them to go.
Right, right.
But it's, again, if the execution hadn't been so good, I might have kind of agree with them on some of these things. But I'm really, like, a lot of these reviews, when I read about it, they're like, I had a great time, but, why wasn't the plot better? I'm like, didn't you just say you had a great time?
Yeah.
I think the cool thing right now is to kind of dump on Marvel.
Yeah.
And I'm not here for it.
No, it's not cool.
It was a good time. I laughed a lot. I mean, I just liked the fun adventure of it all. Kamala Khan is a great character that I hope to see more and more of.
Yeah.
I want to see the further adventures of these characters.
Yeah, I had a blast. I want more of this. I'm disappointed that I have to wait an extra year to see any Marvel movies, but I understand that's the cost of the
strike.
You'll
see Deadpool?
You know what, Nick? That doesn't make it better. I know that doesn't make it better.
You will be there on opening night at Deadpool.
I don't think I will.
Really?
Why would you think he'd be opening night? He might
Because it's got Wolverine in it.
Well, it's also the first MCU version.
It's going to be just... It's going to be goofy stuff.
We know Deadpool is joining the MCU.
They could drop some stuff into it, some end credit scenes that would be enticing even to the likes of you and I, Randy, because they're going to be like, okay, a lot of this stuff is goofy, but there's like some kind of real ass scene in there.
Right.
Who knows? But I'm not there.
Randy
will need some convincing. I don't think you're necessarily wrong, though, Nick. It could happen.
It could happen.
Yeah.
I mean, I may be so desperate for a Marvel movie at that point.
Also, I think you would, as much as neither you and I are fans of Deadpool, you've seen the movies, and they're pretty good movies.
I generally like the Deadpool movies.
Very funny and all that stuff.
I've seen them each at least
once. I've seen clips, and they look pretty funny, but I'm just obstinate, and it's funny. So I'm just going to obstinately not see them.
I will also say that there are some caveats to why this is underperforming in the sense that
they couldn't
promote it. Right. That's a huge thing. You can't have Brie Larson and all the other people out there kind of telling people about why this is so much fun and like that. So it's a quieter reception. I think we're going to see some bounce back in the next couple of weeks.
I hope that Disney gives it the chance.
Hunger Games is unfortunately going to crush it.
Crush it, yeah.
Which is too bad. That's 2 weeks out. So hopefully, I will say though, people are touting that Killers of the Flower Moon made so much money. This is maybe like $10 million behind it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yes, those are two different types of movies.
Right,
two different
FX budget movie versus...
And I know this may or may not make its budget and stuff back, but this is not the abject failure people are calling
it. No, it's so good, and I'm very tired of the narrative that it's a failure in some way. Like, even if it doesn't make all its money back, it's one of the better Marvel movies in the past few years.
I mean, I would say it's better than Quantumania.
By a lot.
By a lot.
Yeah.
But for me, I would also put it above Black Panther 2.
Yeah.
I'd put it... there was another one in there somewhere. I forget what it is.
Dark World.
I meant of the recent
stuff. Of the recent
stuff. Shang-Chi.
Yeah, Shang-Chi.
It's fine.
I enjoyed Shang-Chi.
Me too.
But this was better.
I like Black Widow. This is better.
I agree with all of that.
Of the post Endgame movies, I really think the only thing in its class is Guardians of the Galaxy, maybe Wakanda Forever, and Spider-Man, which I count different.
I might disagree. I think Black Widow is a lot better than people give it credit for.
Black Widow's really good. I just don't think it's in this class. I don't think it's as good as this.
I
would remove the word really from that, and I would say Black Widow is good. Forming the spectrum.
I did rewatch
us Florence Pugh.
I love Florence Pugh, the actress. Does not mean I love that movie.
I just like her.
Dave, I also think in watching Hawkeye, it gave me more of an appreciation for Black Widow.
Okay.
I watched Hawkeye, I went back to Black Widow, and I appreciated it more.
Well, one of the things that's, you know, like, I know people are talking about Marvel fatigue and stuff like that, but one of the things that this reminded me that's cool, so cool about the shared universe is how it can kind of re-enthuse you for another aspect. Just like when I was a kid, I read a freaking Dazzler comic that had the X-Men and the Avengers in it, and that's how I found out about them, and they were super cool, and I wanted to go see what their books were like. And now I'm going to I'm going to go finish watching Ms. Marvel. By the way, it's dope. That show has a good soundtrack, too.
Yeah, Ms. Marvel's great.
A lot of Indian hip-hop and stuff like that, along with some regular hip-hop, too.
Great music in that.
Regular American hip-hop.
Yep.
And then I think I'm going to have fun watching Hawkeye, too. I had already seen at least the first episodes of both series and liked them, so it's just a matter of kind of, like, finding the right time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm like, oh, cool, it's fun to actually step back into this shared universe, and people should do the same.
Yeah, this should rejuvenate people who are fatigued by Marvel.
Yep. I feel like it's an energetic movie. It's hard to kind of not be rejuvenated unless you're a jaded critic with a lump of coal for a heart.
Yes, in which case, I will murder you.
All right. Randy will put you out of your misery. You need face the bitterness of life no more.
All right, that'll wrap it up for us. We'll be back next time with more. And until that time,
Joe.
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.